All right. Now, before I bring on Reed to go over the NCAA tournament for 25, 30 minutes, I wanted to start at the top for a couple minutes to go over the big news in the NFL, and that was Tom Brady unretiring and returning back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Look, this is pretty surprising. You know, the past few weeks, there were some murmurs he might come back, some whispers about San Francisco 49ers. Then we see the video with Ronaldo, where Ronaldo says, "Hey, you're retiring, right?" And we see Brady kind of shrugging him off, not completely committed. And then we hear the news that he's coming back. And here's the thing about Brady that's different than a lot of the other great quarterbacks that retired. Brady was really good last year, and there's some numbers that suggest it was like a top three season in Brady's career. He comes in second in the MVP voting. He has an amazing comeback in the divisional round against the Rams, down 27-3 with like 18 minutes left in the game. And outside of winning a Super Bowl, that was one of the best games to go out on, a massive comeback. And then obviously Todd Bowles calls the all-out blitz, and they get a field goal after a deep throw to Cup. But we look at all the other great quarterbacks. None of them leave really when they're on top of their game. That was kind of what stood out with Brady deciding to hang it up when he did. We've got Peyton Manning, had the noodle arm, Brett Favre throwing interceptions all over the place. Big Ben, we saw him last year. Don't need any more explanation. Phillip Rivers, not bad, but just still, middle of the pack, definitely dropped off from where he once was. Drew Brees also had taken a few steps back, although I don't think he was as bad as people made him to be. But in general, all the great quarterbacks, when they retire, are well off from their peak. And then we have Brady, who came in second in the MVP voting last year. But something feels a little fishy about Brady returning. I got my sports antenna in the air, and it's just waving all around. And for a few different reasons. First off, some of the comments Bruce Arians has made when the reporters are asking him about a Brady trade. Would you trade him to a team he wants to go to? He's like, no, it's a business. Just kind of being a little rough around the edges. And there's the Antonio Brown thing, which in my opinion, I think Arians could have handled it better. Sometimes when you have different players, you got to appease them, especially star players like that. They really needed that third receiver. I think Brady probably resents Arians for the way he handled it and missing out on that third receiver. We saw how the offense took a major step back without that third weapon. So we've got the Arian stuff, but secondly, the two things Brady values the most in offense is one, offensive line, and two, a good receiving core. Tampa Bay has lost 40% of their offensive linemen. They had one guy retire. They just had lost another guy to free agency. Receiver-wise, obviously no AB. They still have Mike Evans, and then they've got Godwin, who's coming off a pretty bad knee surgery. And so looking at this team, in addition to, having a bunch of free agents up in the air right now, it just doesn't seem like a Super Bowl roster. And it's just, I don't think this story is quite over yet. I think the main reason Brady wanted to retire, because as we talked, it obviously wasn't his performance or his health. I think one of the main reasons is he didn't think Tampa Bay was a Super Bowl contender anymore. And they haven't done anything to improve their roster. If anything, it's gotten worse. And so, Brady doesn't just want to come back and, go 10-7, lose in the first round. And so I feel like there's more coming. I don't know if it's going to be a trade, if the Bucs and Brady are positioning like he's going to stay there so they can have more leverage with the trade. I don't know what exactly is going on, but something feels off, and I feel like there's more to come in this story. The one thing that would support Brady staying with Tampa Bay is you look at that division in the NFC South, the Falcons, they're going to go 9-8 again. They don't have any great additions. Ridley's out for a year. And then we look at the Saints, new head coach. They got Jameis Winston, nothing you're really scared of on that offense. And then you've got the Panthers with no quarterback, unproven head coach. Maybe they get Deshaun Watson, but either way, if Brady stays with Tampa, that's what he's looking at. Hey, I can go 6-0, 5-1 in my division. He's looking at the NFC, and it reminds me a lot of LeBron James in the Eastern Conference from like 2010 to 2018, where he was like, okay, I've got by far the best team. I'm not going to the West. I'm staying here, and I just got to beat, the Raptors and the Pacers. And in Brady's example, the Raptors and the Pacers are the Packers, who don't seem to be trending in the right direction, and then the Rams, who are very beatable. Bucks could have beaten them. Bengals could have beaten them in the Super Bowl, and I think their roster's taking a step back, losing a couple guys in free agency as well. So if I'm wrong, and this story is, face value, he just wanted to come back to the Bucks, his reasoning is, hey, this NFC is wide open. You know, Dak Prescott, have you seen Dak's numbers without Amari Cooper on the field? Completely different quarterback. And San Francisco, Trey Lance, unproven. I think the Niners would be ecstatic if he brings that offense to the same level Jimmy G had him last year. Then you've got Rodgers and the Packers. They're losing to Darius Smith, although I'm not sure Packers fans were too upset based on how that injury went last season. And the Rams losing guys and tough to repeat. I think Brady, if this is what we're looking at, is like, okay, I can go 6-0. I can get a one seed, win a couple home playoff games, and then I'm back in the Super Bowl, and then I can go out on that. That would be the face value case, but I still think there's something under the surface simmering, and I don't think this story is quite done yet. But let's talk some hoops with Reed. All right, now I bring Reed on. A lot of people have been comparing us to Ryan Russillo and Bill Simmons, kind of a 1A, 1B type thing when it comes to talking hoops. So joined by Reed, talking some March Madness. And Reed, I want to hear your first kind of like takeaway or reaction when you first saw the field of 68. Mine was, thank God Xavier is not in the field, because they, down the stretch, they had like the worst offense I've ever seen. And I watched multiple UVA Louisville games. I mean, they had no idea how to give it to the big white dude down low, their guards constantly dribbling it off their foot. I was really excited they were not in it. But what was your first reaction?
I would say Michigan not even being one of the last four in, Michigan straight up being just an 11 seed already their way in the round of 64. I think that was the biggest head scratcher for me. All around, though, I thought it was pretty accurate. I thought the bubble was very soft, which we kind of knew coming in. I thought the committee did a really good job. Some exciting matchups for sure.
Yeah, 17-14 for Michigan, and they get in. But yeah, I agree. There's no teams that like really had a big case to get in. I guess the only one would be Texas A&M, but even them, they had some spots where they were pretty bad. So overall, we got the field set. I got a printed out bracket. I wanted to start with a few of the local teams in Virginia first. And so let's start with U of R, University of Richmond, making a run in the A-10 tournament. And they are matched up with Iowa in the first round. It's a 5-12 matchup. I really like Iowa this year. This is kind of giving away part of my bracket. I don't have them quite going to the Final Four, but I'm big on Iowa. They're number one in the country in assist to turnover ratio. I don't think Richmond has the talent to keep up with that high scoring offense of Iowa. But what do you think about U of R in this matchup?
Yeah, this is actually a really good matchup for basketball fans. I would say for Richmond, it's not a great matchup. You just hit it. I mean, Richmond struggles to score. I know Coach Mooney's got like the Princeton offense. It's hyped up or whatever, but they're playing a different juggernaut in Iowa. They're Big Ten champions. They run a true five out motion. They'll play Keegan Murray at the five. Yep. I mean, that's really hard to guard. Much respect to Fran McCaffrey as well. We actually coached against him when I was at Guilford 2 years ago. Came in the locker room, spoke to our guys after. So always pulling for him.
Is that a little Coach K after the game? Like, hey, yeah, good effort, guys.
Exactly. If you see Fran on the sideline, kind of as a hothead, but he's a great guy. Much respect to him, and looking forward to watching them play. They're peaking right now.
Yeah, they're good. I really like this Iowa team, and they could win this game by 30. I mean, they're blowing some teams out down the stretch. But last team in Virginia, our little local period, Virginia Tech Hokies, they make a run. They win the ACC tournament. They really blow out UNC and Duke back-to-back games. They shoot lights out from three. They're third in the country in three-point percentage at 39%. They've got three white dudes that just run around. They got Couture, Storm Murphy, another white guy, and then they can get it down low to Aluma and Mutz, who are really athletic bigs that can play defense, and they can catch the ball and pass. They're both really good passers, too. It's a really fun team to watch, and they're matched up with Texas. I haven't seen a lot of Texas, but what I have seen, they're not the best scoring team, and so I think they've got a real shot at this 11-6 matchup. I actually have them beating Texas and Chris Beard and kind of up and down season for Texas. What do you think about this matchup?
Great matchup. Really good offensive team in Virginia Tech versus a really, really good defensive team in Texas. Texas got a weird roster, a lot of transfers. Marcus Carr, stud, the point guard, transfer from Minnesota. Devin Askew, Kentucky transfer, another guard. Allen inside, Utah transfer. They're a little small, and they just don't score it. That's typical, you know, Chris Beard team. But real quick on Virginia Tech, man, I think you talked about it. Munson and Luma, their ability to score with their back to the basket. Obviously, we know with Tech, they can really, really shoot it. Multiple guys, pass, dribble, shoot. Really hard to guard. This is a terrible matchup for Texas. I even think Tech's probably better than an 11 seed coming off winning the ACC championship. They had a winning record in the ACC. Obviously, yeah, started really slow in conference. But again, talking about a team that is peaking right now, Iowa, Virginia Tech. I mean, they're dangerous teams. They can really score it. They can really pass it, and they can really shoot it. Would not want to see those teams in my bracket.
January 26th, Tech was 10-10, 2-7 in conference. They go on a 13-2 run. And based on the 11 seed, you pointed it out, if they don't win that game against Duke, I don't think they're in. And no. So that was like they had to win the tournament, and they did. They're hot right now. And Maddox, the guy that hit the game-winning shot against Clemson, I mean, that stroke, it kind of reminds me of I think his name was Tyler Thornton from LSU. Was that his name? Last name was Thornton.
Yeah.
He's got like the same stroke. It's a really nice stroke. But yeah, Tech shooting lights out. They're a scary team. They could also get cold and lose early. So we'll see with Virginia Tech. So that's 6-11 matchup with Texas. Before we get into more of the seeding things, I dug up some stats. The percentage of these lower seeds winning, I'll just run through for some background information before we get into some of these games. So we'll start with the 15 seeds because we know 16 seed has only won once, UMBC over UVA. But 15 seeds, 6% of the time. 14 seeds win 15% of the times. 13 seeds, 21%. And then we've got the 11 and 12 seeds win 35 and 37%. 10 seeds win 40%, and then 40% of the time. And then 9-8 is 50-50. But let's stay in the ACC, and let's talk about the Duke Blue Devils, who, you know, Coach K, I think the past 10 years has been a bad coach. I mean, when you look at talent to production and wins, it's been way off. This year, they have an unprecedented amount of talent. I think their talent has actually been understated. They've got five first-rounders projected right now. They've got their center, Williams, going out the end of the first round. They got Keels going, and then they've got Banchero, AJ Griffin, who might be a top five pick, and who's the fifth guy?
Mark Williams.
Yeah. So yeah. Mark Williams, Keels, Griffin. Yeah. Oh yeah, and Wendell Moore Jr.
Yep.
Yeah. So he's in there too. So they've got a loaded team. I don't think any team's had five first round picks. Duke, couple embarrassing losses. I don't know how they lost at home to UNC. Like, after that game, some of the Duke players were like laughing on the sideline. I didn't really like that. I don't want to be old curmudgeon-y guy, but it seems like there's a lack of leadership with all these freshmen. And, you know, Coach K's last season is kind of overshadowing everything. They don't play any defense. I don't know what they do in practice because it's not practicing defense. I've got Duke. You know, I would love to see Duke lose to Davidson. I would love to see Davidson beat Michigan State and then Duke lose to little tiny Davidson. But I've got them going to the Sweet 16. What are your thoughts on this Duke team headed into the tournament?
Yeah, I think the Coach K thing you talked about is very real. It's a shame because his Duke teams used to play such good defense. You think about that.
Slapping the floor, yeah.
Yeah, that team that beat Butler in 2010, that John Shire senior-led team. I mean, those guys play their ass off on defense. Obviously, Duke has all the talent in the world. But they kind of have a brutal path. Let's say they beat Cal State Fullerton, which is not a guarantee with Coach
right,
K.
Yeah.
We've seen it versus Mercer. We've seen it versus Lehigh. So, but they're probably going to play Michigan State. I think Michigan, that's a bad matchup for Davidson playing Michigan State.
Yeah.
That's not a great matchup for Duke. I mean, Michigan State's going to punch him in the face. It's going to be
those big guys, Gabe Brown, and yeah.
They have size to match up with Duke. And then if Duke somehow gets by that, I mean, they're going to have to play Texas Tech, who I legitimately think is better than them, a better college basketball team than Duke. Duke, obviously, just man-for-man talent, is probably the best team in the field just on paper. But, I mean, that's kind of a brutal path for them. I mean, I would say they would be Cal State Fullerton and probably be Michigan State, but I don't see them getting past a Texas Tech team who I'm extremely high on.
Yeah, I've got them losing to Texas Tech. What are your thoughts on Coach K the past 10 years? Because I think he's been, you know, really pretty bad. He hasn't adjusted to this one and done where, you've got to get the players to buy in really quickly. And in years past, he used to basically just have the seniors coach the team and be like, this is how it's going to be done. We got Greg Paulus. We got Nolan Smith. We got Chris Duhon. They're going to lay it out. And I really feel like, you know, this defense is really bad. Like the driving lanes, the lack of help, like what's your assessment of him as a coach the past 10 years?
Yeah. So I think it's just more with the effect in the way that college basketball has changed with recruiting, where Coach K and Duke, as you see, like a school like a Wisconsin or like a Michigan, when Coach Beilein was there, you know, they're not necessarily going after the top prospects, or even like Villanova, you know, they're going after their guys. And I think Coach K used to go after his guys. And then I think the Nike deal came in, and it wasn't about his guys. It was more about, you know, can we put together the ESPN top 10 team? And right. I think that became more important than him than, you know, winning ACC championships, which, I mean, I guess Duke this year was the first time they won the ACC regular season championship in probably, what, 12, 15 years, which is an absolute disgrace for Duke basketball not being able to win an ACC regular season championship in that long. But I just think he's not even recruiting, first of all. His assistants are recruiting, but it's Nike recruiting for him, and he's not picking his guys. He's trying to get the ESPN guys and then make it all
right.
Work.
That's a good point. I wonder if the team would be better if he was – you know, recruiting guys further down in the 50s and 60s, but getting guys that are going to stay for 3-4 years and doing it that way. I wonder if he almost, by getting these talented guys, was almost taking away from his strength of developing players three, four years. But yeah, so we're on the same page. So we've got them winning the first two. So we're going to have another full week of talking about Coach K, but then we got him going down, both of us, Texas Tech, who's a really good team. Might touch on them in a bit. Let's stay in the ACC in North Carolina. We got UNC, and so they were playing pretty well as of late, and they were shooting the three pretty well past couple months in ACC play. They open up with Marquette and Shaka Smart in the 8-9 matchup. I like the way UNC's been playing. I don't know a ton about Marquette. I know you follow Marquette a lot closer than I do. Just watching UNC, it seems like they're playing more cohesive. They've got a little more in and out, and it's a less Caleb Love like dribbling around jacking threes, and more Davis, who's more kind of like the mature guard taking the good shots, and then adding in Baycott. Baycott's been staying out of trouble more the past couple weeks. So I like this UNC team to win against Marquette and actually give Baylor a little trouble in that second round. But what do you see in this 8-9 matchup?
Yeah, I think this is a great matchup for UNC. Marquette's a little smaller. Marquette has not been playing great basketball of late. I would probably say over the last month and a half, they're probably below 500 overall. But great coaching job in this first year by Shaka Smart. But I think if UNC gets past Marquette, I think this is a great matchup for them versus Baylor. Baylor's big man's out for the year. That big African guy, I forgot his name. He was their starting center last year on their national championship team. I think that's a great matchup for UNC. I also think UNC could easily lose this game to Marquette. I believe they play Thursday. UNC's just so up and down, man. They like teams that go through really long scoring droughts in an NCAA tournament setting. Teams that are not that great offensively, I kind of have red flags, especially in a one game setting. If they get by Marquette, they will pose a major challenge for. It's not the same Baylor team we're accustomed to seeing from last year.
Right. And I agree. It's all about shot making, like which teams can make shots, get you out of those droughts. We see it with Iowa, and we'll see it with this other team. This is my big, like, surprise double digit run to the Final Four team. And we're staying in the ACC talking about shot making. And that's the Miami Hurricanes as the 10 seed. I've seen it. They've got Wong. They've got first team all ACC Cameron McGusty. They got Charlie Moore, who is on his fifth team. It's his sixth year. He went from Cal to Kansas to DePaul, and now he's with Miami. They've got Larinaga that has made a run. They've got Miller, this long lefty guy that's been giving basically every single team, Duke, UVA, UNC, Virginia Tech, everybody trouble. And then they also got Wardenburg, that tall white dude that can knock down shots. They can hit shots. You know, the trouble is if they just have one guy like McGusty, if he gets cold and goes 3-for-17, he's really not going to pass it. But I've got them making a deep run Before I go, you know, through their run, what's your feeling on Miami? Are you leaning towards this team is like, yeah, they can make shots, but they're also prone to losing really bad games, or are you closer to they could make a deep run?
I actually agree with you. I think they're more prone to make a deep run. Great, great matchup in the first round versus USC. I think they'll beat those guys. I love the four guards. I think it's different, and you don't really see it. Auburn, especially in the SEC, where maybe besides Alabama, most teams are playing, you know, two bigs. But Auburn's got two legit bigs, though, man. Walker Kessler at center and Jabari Smith at the four.
True.
Not a lot of teams can match up with that, but Auburn's guards are really small. Their wings are really small. So that's where I think Miami can really match up well with them. I really like Auburn, too, a lot. I do like Miami, but I definitely like Miami versus USC. Versus Auburn, I think it's going to be a little tougher just because of Auburn's front court.
That's a good point. And Auburn's one of those teams that's like they didn't finish the season strong, and so we're kind of all forgetting about Auburn. You may have just talked me out of it. I may stick with Miami, but the front court part is a good thing to point out, because Wardenburg can't guard anybody down low. Miller is a little too skinny to really keep up with some of those bigger Kessler, those guys down low. That'll be a good matchup, though. Like, I don't trust, you know, Auburn's going to have the best player on the court, but is he going to have the ball in his hands when he needs it? Those guards really freelance a lot. And so we'll see with that. Okay, so that's Miami. I've got them making a run. But that does give me pause with Auburn. We'll come back to that. But let's actually go to the first four in, or the first four. So we've got Rutgers, Notre Dame, and we've got Wyoming versus Indiana. Any of these teams you think can make Sweet 16? So they'd have to win three games, including these games on Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm actually a fan of all four of these teams. I don't know how much. Probably people have not seen a lot of Rutgers basketball, but Rutgers in the round of 32 last year had Houston beat. I think they had them by, I want to say, 10 with 2 minutes left. Ended up losing that game last year. They were a 10 seed. They have multiple huge wins in the Big Ten this year. They beat Wisconsin. They beat Purdue. They beat Iowa. I want to say they beat Illinois as well.
Yeah. That home court, where most of those games, that's the one thing that gives me pause, is just that home court thing. And that's the same thing with Tennessee and some of these SEC teams was – home court, they ran it, but you know, on a neutral court, do you think it's the same Rutgers team?
I do. Just their style of play. Every game they play is going to be close. The way they play, they're well coached. They're so physical. They're big. They play D. A lot of dudes from their team last year. They're all older. But it's a great matchup with Notre Dame. Notre Dame's a really good offensive team. Multiple good guys that can shoot it, that can handle it, that can pass it. I think that's going to be a fascinating matchup. The winner of that's going to have. I mean, I don't think Alabama's scaring either of those teams.
No.
And then Indiana, man, they really throw it in the post. They run their shit. Mike Woodson's done a hell of a job his first year. Wyoming's got two studs. Their point guard Machado's a stud. They got a big guy, big African guy, a lefty inside as well. That'll be a great post matchup between Indiana's big and Wyoming's stud inside. So,
yeah.
Four good teams, man. Really good teams for sure.
They are good. Yeah. And I love Trace Jackson. He's just a classic, like, really good college player that's been around forever. And then on the Notre Dame side, they've got Chris Goodwin, I believe. I think he's – so Notre Dame shot 40% from three in the ACC. Goodwin shooting 45% from three. So he's a guy that can put up points real quick against a pretty good Rutgers defense. But like you said, there's Rutgers, Geo Baker, and those veteran guards pretty good. And they do play in a ton of close games, pretty good defensively. So you've got Rutgers. Do you have Rutgers over Bama? Is that a definite?
I do. I think Alabama plays very similar to last year, but it's just not – it's not the shot making with, you know, SEC Player of the Year, Herb Jones.
Right.
You know, they still have Quiverly. They still have Shackelford. They're not as big as they were last year. They still run their five out. They still let it fly. They're still dangerous as hell. But just, you know, our favorite term, the shot making, is not what it was last year. They also don't rebound it offensively like they did last year. So I would like, honestly, Rutgers or Notre Dame, whoever wins that game to advance past Alabama.
Yeah, so Alabama, fifth most three-point attempts in all of college basketball this year. So you're on Rutgers. So that it's a tough year for the ACC. If Notre Dame loses, you know, they only have four teams in the final, you know, 65. So definitely a low year for the ACC. So let's just start running through. We've mainly done the top left portion. Let's actually go to Gonzaga and start with the one seed in the top left region. So their matchup would be either against the Memphis or Boise. Let's move past that. They could face UConn in the Sweet 16. How far do you have Gonzaga going? They've got Chet Holmgreen, who's 14 points, 10 rebounds, 3.5 blocks, defensive player of the year in that conference. And more importantly, Gonzaga's top 10, both in offense and defense of adjusted efficiency. Obviously, they still have Drew Timmy that we all remember from last year. Are you high on Gonzaga? Are they a Final Four team?
I'm high on Gonzaga. I think they're going to have a really hard game in the Sweet 16, though, whether it's UConn, whether it's Arkansas. I actually like Vermont a lot, but that's a tough first-round matchup with Arkansas. UConn, I'm really high on UConn.
I like UConn. Their center's good.
Yeah, he's really good, man. He's potential All-American. Sunoco, I believe his name is.
Yeah.
RJ Cole is really smooth point guard. Martin can really shoot it at the two. Jackson's like 6'9", three-man for them. Coach Hurley's cussing out the refs. There. I mean, that muscle man, Coach Hurley, round of 32 matchup might be appointment television. But I do really like Gonzaga. They're giant. I'm big on teams that are huge. I think having size, being able to rebound at an extremely high level, obviously have some type of shot making. I just think they're set up, and I think they don't want to see Texas Tech in the Elite Eight. I think Texas Tech is better than them. I think if they saw Duke, they would handle Duke.
Yeah.
But I truly believe UConn could beat them. I don't know if I have the balls put that in my bracket.
Yeah. But how are the Gonzaga guards? Because there's normally a Gonzaga guard that we hear about. There's no Jalen Suggs, obviously, this year. What are their guards like?
Yeah, so they got Nimhart from last year. He came off the bench for him last year. Their guards are bigger. Razul Bolton's actually a Petersburg kid, Iowa State transfer. Their guards are bigger, but what they don't have is, you know, that smaller shifty guy. You know, when it's, you know, last 5 minutes of a game and not a whole lot's being ran. You know, it's a lot of just high ball screen play, and you kind of just need guys that make shit happen, create for themselves, create for others. And I would say Gonzaga does not really have that, but they do have the Twin Towers inside, which could bail them out when they're missing shots late.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm a little, there's some sort of red flag with Gonzaga where they don't, you know, you did name Nimhart, but they don't have like a dominant guard that if they're facing pressure, it can make sure you get into your offense. So it's a little worrisome for me. So yeah, I'm stuck in the Gonzaga UConn in the Sweet 16. And then Texas Tech, let's just go to Texas Tech. You seem to be really high on them. We both have them over Duke. Pretty old team, defensive-minded team, seemingly not skipping a beat without Chris Beard. So I don't know what that says about him. But what do you like most about Texas Tech?
Yeah, I think obviously you think of Texas Tech, you think defense, and even without Chris Beard, they're still unbelievable defensively. I thought they were the best team in the Big 12 all year. I mean, they're starting five. All five guys can shoot the three. They got size. I mean, Terrence Shannon's going to be a first-round pick in the NBA. He's barely played this year. Bryce Williams inside can pick and pop. I mean, they're probably 7-8 deep, I want to say. They're bigger. They're longer.
Santos Silva, VCU product.
VCU legend. They're not as offensively gifted as maybe a team you would like, but like they got grown-ass dudes on that team. They play hard as shit. They scored enough. Multiple dudes who average double figures. They shoot it well enough. I think that's the team that's coming out of the Final Four in that region.
Wow. Wow. Okay. That's big. So you got them over Gonzaga, I guess, in the Elite Eight. But yeah, so the one red flag for them would be they would be prone to those scoring droughts where they're not, you know, got a guard that can, you know, drive and start making plays. So let's move down bottom left region, the Baylor region. We kind of already went over Baylor and UNC on the top part. Kind of a sneaky under the radar team, UCLA, Final Four team. Seems like they're getting healthier as we get down to the stretch. They got Johnny Juzang. They're playing a little bit better down the stretch. They're a four seed. And looks like they would match up with St. Mary's in the 4-5 matchup in the round of 32, and then either play like a Baylor or UNC type. Where are you with UCLA? Because, I mean, they've really been under the radar this year. I haven't watched too many of their games, but just hearing about them.
They've pretty much been beat up all year. You'll recognize the faces when you see them play this week, this weekend. It's the it's the same five from last year. Tiger Campbell running the show. Zhu Zhang, Juarez, Riley inside. You got Bernard coming off the bench. They're set up, man. I think they have a pretty easy road here. I don't think St. Mary's is good, but I would like Wyoming or Indiana over St. Mary's. And then, I mean, I could easily see UNC beating Baylor. I mean, even if Baylor wins that game, I think UCLA would be favored over Baylor on a neutral floor. On a neutral floor right now. Mick Cronin's awesome too, man. Like, he's awesome on the sidelines. His teams execute at such a high level. They play such good defense. I'm really excited to watch them run it back in the NCAA tournament this year.
We're both low on Baylor. They lost three. Their three guards really carried them last year. Teague, Mitchell, Butler. They lost them all to the draft. And so, you know, I think it's tough to replace that in the NCAA tournament. I think it's going to come up. So we'll see if UNC can be the team to be that. They'd have to get past Marquette first. But let's go to the bottom part of that bracket. That's where we got some big heavy hitter teams. We got Kentucky and Purdue. So we got Purdue, who Jaden Ivey, who I really like him, his quickness. He's able to get to the basket. They're scoring 81 points per game, seventh most in the country, but 100th in defensive efficiency. And so when you look back through the teams that got upset, they've got that similar type team where they score a lot, but their defense is just, you know, layup lines all over the place. Jaden Ivey is not really been interested in playing defense this year. They've got Eden, the big, like 7'6" white dude, who's like the biggest human I've ever seen before. So I've seen a few Purdue games. I really like Ivey. I mean, I don't know why he isn't discussed as being, you know, a top three pick. He's more kind of top five, top seven guy. So they will play Yale. They're going to get past Yale. Then the winner of Texas and Virginia Tech, but then that would set up Sweet 16 versus Kentucky. So where are you at with Purdue and Kentucky? Where would you lean? Because it looks like, you know, unless Murray State can knock off of Kentucky, it looks like that's kind of a pencil in for the Sweet 16. Where are you with those two teams?
So I've seen both a ton. I've probably seen Purdue close to 10, 12 times, Kentucky 5 to 10 times easily. I'll start with Kentucky. I think Kentucky's the best team in the country. I think they're giant. They got everything you need. They got the guard play. They're deep. I mean, they're bringing top in Davion Mintz off the bench. Those dudes would start for any team in the country. Yeah. I mean, Oscar Tshiebwe might be the player of the year in the country.
Quick stat on him before you finish. They grabbed 40% of their missed shots with him on the court. So, like, almost half the time they're getting offensive rebounds. But go ahead.
Yeah. And he's 6'10". Keon Brooks is 6'10". Could probably touch a 20-foot rim off his vert.
Yeah.
And then They got Ty Ty and then Xavion Wheeler running point, and then the Davidson transfer at the three. And then, like I said, they're like 8-9 deep. And Coach Cal teams always get better and better and better as the year goes. They've been kind of beat up this year, so you haven't really seen that trajectory from a normal Coach Cal team. But they play defense. I have them winning the national championship there. I think they're the best team. But Purdue, on the other hand, I think Purdue is going in the wrong direction. I think they're very sloppy with the basketball. I think they can get whatever shot they want down the court, but they just seem to do stupid shit. They take quick threes when they should be throwing the ball in the post. It's kind of weird they don't play Travion Williams and Edie together. Yeah. They haven't done it all this year. I don't know if they're saving it for the NCAA tournament or something, but they're deep as well. But, I mean, outside Jaden and Ivy, they're too big. They don't really have anyone that create a shot. I think if they play Virginia Tech, Virginia Tech's going to beat them. I think that's a terrible matchup for Purdue. Virginia Tech would just be running circles around their defense. They have the size to rebound against Purdue. I would say probably if you would have asked me 2 months ago, I would have said Purdue is probably going to win the national championship. But just watching them lately, all seven of their losses are in conference play. I don't know, just kind of watching them the last month and a half here. It's just something's off with them. And Matt Painter's a hell of a coach too, and can't really put my finger on it. But they're trending in the wrong direction right now.
Yeah, you may have talked me out of another pick just talking about Purdue, because just watching, I really like Jaden Ivey. I like having the best player on the court, but when you've got a team that's got talent, but they're not playing anywhere, like they're not making the right decisions, that doesn't all of a sudden get better in the NCAA tournament. It normally gets worse, where now you've got guys spazzing out, you know, 19-year-olds spazzing out, just taking shots because, oh, you know, you look at the clock, oh, wow, there's only 9 minutes left and we're down nine, like, or down 8 or 9, I got to start pressing now. And then it's like, whoa, so now it's a 17-point game. We're not guarding anybody. And, you know, like I said, when you've got a team that's so good offensively, There's actually, so the stat I said, 100th in defensive efficiency, which is what Purdue is. There's only been in the past 20 years, only two other teams that have even been in the tournament. And Purdue is a 3 seed, but there's only been two other teams that have even high major teams that have been in the tournament with that bad of a defense. And they all lost like in the first round. They fit the profile of a team getting upset. You know, I do think that Virginia Tech could give them problems just hitting threes all over the place. So you've got Kentucky winning it all. I know you like Wheeler, another little lefty, a young Reed Jacoby getting the paint, making plays. Okay, so that wraps up the second region in the bottom left. Let's go to the top right, Arizona. So I haven't watched really any Arizona. The games are too late. Not a huge Pac-12 guy. But they do have three, seems like a kind of a three-headed monster type approach. What, you know, in 30, 45 seconds, what is this Arizona team?
They're giant, man. Like, again, I'm big on teams that are big. And you talked about Kentucky grabbing their misses. They throw it inside. They grab their misses. And they play fast. They're set up too, man. They got a nice little road. So I like them a lot.
So they would play either a Seton Hall or a TCU in the second round. That's the 8-9 matchup. Let's go a little further down, though. And this is one of the most interesting teams to me in the whole tournament, and that is the Houston Cougars. And so I saw them at the beginning of the year, and they were awesome. So many guys can score. So many guys can hit jumpers. Fabian White can hit jumpers. Then all of a sudden, they have Sasser, their NBA guy, go down, and they start hitting a little bumpy stretch, and they're like losing to teams that they shouldn't be losing to. And so this is one of the teams where I'm like, they could lose in the first round. So they got UAB. We've all heard about Jelly Walker, 20 points a game, shooting 40% from three for that UAB team. That's a 12-5 matchup. So I'm really stuck on Houston. I could go either way. I mean, they've got that experience, Final Four last year, but they could also lose in the first round. And I'm almost leaning towards losing in the first round. If they had Sasser, I think this is another Final Four team. But where are you at with Houston?
Yeah, I thought I actually had them in the Final Four last year, and they got extremely lucky in the round of 32. Rutgers had those.
The Rutgers, beat.
They had them beat. This is gonna be a fun one, man. These teams play the exact style. It's just they play hard as shit. They don't care how many shots they miss from it. They're going to get the rebound. It just seems like every year though, a Conference USA team always wins in the first round. Last year we had it with North Texas going to the Sweet 16. UAB actually just beat North Texas was on a huge winning streak. But, I mean, I think the winner of this game is going to be set up. I mean, I think Illinois is going to lose to Chattanooga. Wanted to hit on them real quick, man. They're giant. They have, I don't know if you remember, Sosa from Kansas.
The guy that threw the chair.
Yeah, man. He's their starting center. All their guards are 6'4", 6'5", and built. Man, I watched their championship game versus Furman when I hit the half-court shot to win. I was really impressed with them, and having Illinois is going the wrong way.
Yeah.
I think Houston's going the wrong way as well.
So they can match up with Coburn down low. And then what's going on with their guard with the fro who's always turning the ball over? I've seen I saw a couple of their games in December. I didn't see a lot recently, but it seems like he's just spazzing out all over the place.
Yeah. Again, just Illinois is weird, man. Their guards are all shot first. All their guards are shot first, shot first, shot first. And they're a little smaller too. And they're streaky as hell. Like they talk about scoring droughts, man. If you have anyone that can match up with Kobe Coburn against Illinois, I think you like where you're at, because those guys really, really go through major scoring droughts. And again, that's a red flag I look for.
So we're thinking UAB into the Sweet 16.
I would say
potentially.
I like Chattanooga, man. I really do.
Oh, Chattanooga over. Okay. Chattanooga.
And I think that sets up Arizona. It really
that
does.
I was about to say that sets up really well for Arizona to get to the Elite Eight at least. Yep. But let's move to the bottom part, who they would face and who is actually my national champion. So you disclose yours, Kentucky. Mine's Villanova. I really like the way they've been playing this year. And Colin Gillespie in the Big East Championship, they were down. They couldn't score. He just pulls up, hits back-to-back threes. Bang, they're up 5 points. I mean, it was incredible. They play. They only throw bounce passes. They don't turn the ball over. They've got some athletic guys. I don't love their size. They're kind of stuck with guys that are like 6'7". They don't have like a big center. And so they are a matchup dependent team. And so I'd like to hear your take on a couple of their first matchups. They're going to go through Delaware, but Ohio State could be a bad matchup with Liddell down low. But I actually really like Loyola Chicago. I mean, I saw them early in the year against Michigan State, and they obviously got Denzel Valentine's brother, Drew Valentine, who's awesome. So he was an assistant when they were making those runs. They've got Lucas Williamson, a fifth-year guard, 40% from three. As a team, they're 38% from three. I think they beat Ohio State. Talk about a team that is not trending in the right direction. I mean, Ohio State beat Duke early on. They're looking good, but did not finish the season well. So I got Loyola Chicago and Nova in the second round. But let's stick with Villanova before we get to Loyola Chicago. What are your thoughts on Villanova? Do they have enough size to make a run?
I would say no. I'm not as high on this Villanova team. I do think they have two really good guards, though. Both seniors, both playing NCAA tournament games, seen it all, shot makers, shot creators. And I really like Jermaine Samuels on the post. He's not as good as Robinson. They had Robinson Earl last year. He's not as good as him. But Jermaine Samuels is a player, man. He can score his back to the basket. He can pick and pop. He can attack a closeout. But I think Ohio State would just be a really bad matchup for him. I'm actually really high on Ohio State. I think anytime Ohio State takes the floor in these first two games, they're going to have the best player in E.J. Liddell. And then Malachi Branham's really coming on. He's a 6'5". Guard, point guard, two guard, freshman.
Yeah.
Really, really good mid-range game. Ohio State's also a little small, though, too, which I think plays into Villanova. I think that would just be a fascinating – if that's a round of 32 game, I mean, I think that's – that would be the best round of 32 matchup outside of Arkansas-UConn we would see on Saturday, Sunday. So I'm really hoping we see that. But Loyola Chicago, we know about them in the NCAA tournament. Obviously, no more Porter Moser roaming the sidelines, but – they still guard you. They still play hard as hell.
They play so hard. They play so hard. Here, one sec. People who aren't watching, I'm sitting in the pitch black. I forgot to turn the light on. It probably looks really weird. I'm going to turn the light on real quick. Okay. And I'm back with the lights on. I was just sitting in the pitch dark. I was like, all right, this looks really weird. Okay. So we got Loyola Chicago, Villanova. So I got Villanova making a run. It's just kind of a gut call. For me, but I am worried about their size, and their defense this year just wasn't nearly as good in years past. They're giving up like down the stretch, like 50% from two pointers, and which is not good. Not a good sign in the tournament. But we also got Tennessee in the middle of this, three seed. They're kind of the biggest outrage out of everybody. People thinking they should get a two seed ahead of Duke. And it just comes down to brand name at this point. Like Duke, they get the nod. They're human beings picking these teams. It's not right. Tennessee, so many good wins. They should have been a two seed if you look at it objectively. So they've got the three seed. Where are you at with Tennessee? And I guess Michigan. Actually, we don't need to talk about Michigan. Where are you at with Tennessee? Do you think they make the Sweet 16 and square up with Nova?
Yeah, I do. I think I like Tennessee. Again, they're big, and they rotate those guys in and out. Just their style of play was just a little concerning in a one-game elimination. I mean, we've seen a Rick Barnes the last 15 years. He hasn't had the greatest NCAA tournament success, but, I mean, just the way they play, they're going to be in close games. I mean, last year they ran into a tough Oregon State team that was hot. So they're going to be in dogfights, and they have the talent. I mean, I think Rick Barnes is a really good coach. They're really good defensively. They're giant, but I think if they got to play Villanova, that'd be a fascinating matchup.
Yeah,
Tennessee versus Ohio State or versus Villanova, fascinating.
It would. So yeah, Villanova, Tennessee size, that could give Villanova trouble. So I'm getting skittish on my Nova pick again, but we'll give our final fours at the end. So I'll pick at some point.
Real quick on Nova though, man. Like if they're in a close game, you got like their chances. Just with those two guards,
I agree.
They're gonna get shots up. You know, Jay Wright's the man. So
they get the right shot. The final 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Where in college, the biggest difference between college and NBA is the end of shot clock, end of game shots. NBA, you're gonna get a decent look. College, you know, if you've got a guard who then a double team comes up, he doesn't know what to do. Villanova, you're gonna get a good shot. It's just whether it goes in or not. So let's move down to the final part of the bracket, bottom right, final stretch, headed by Kansas. Two seed is Auburn down below. We talked about them for a little bit. Let's start up top with Kansas. I'm really low on this Kansas team. I don't like it. I mean, Agbaji, really good, 20 points per game, 40% from three, came back for his second year. Now he's probably going to be, I think, a lottery pick from what I've seen. But they're scoring, it just feels like they go in scoring slumps, and their point guard got injured. And I think you might have more information on this because I've seen him playing in spurts, but what's going on with him? He's from Arizona State, Remy Brown, I believe his name, or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, Remy Martin.
Remy Martin, yeah. So yeah. Where is he at? Is he like just, are they working him back in the lineup? Is that where they're at?
Yeah, so he was actually he was a hell of a player at Arizona State. He was a big time.
He got so many points, yeah.
Yeah, when Kansas got him this past spring, summer, I mean, I think everyone was really fired up. Kansas gonna be number one in the country. He's been hurt. He's been in and out. Dwan Harris actually took his spot, and then Dwan Harris hasn't done shit the last month, so they've actually kind of been going back to Remy Martin. But Remy Martin had been designated to a 10-15 minute.
I don't know why.
Role, yeah.
He's so quick, he can get the offense going. Is that other guy? Is he number three for Kansas?
Yeah,
he can't do anything offensively.
No, he can't. He can't.
That's what frustrates me with that team.
Yeah, and he can't shoot. And that's the other thing. And so, if you're thinking of Kansas, if this was the NBA playoffs, we'd really be hyping up Kansas because they got the three wings: Christian Braun, Agbaji, Jalen Wilson, the 3-and-D guys. They can pass, dribble, shoot. They can switch on to anyone. But this is college basketball, man. And but the thing for them though is that they're set up there, They probably have the two weakest 8-9s in their side. They probably
Creighton
have the
in San Diego State. Yeah.
Yeah, they probably have the weakest 4 seed on their side. I probably say they have the weakest 2 seed as well in their side as well. So I mean, they're in a good spot. And again, man, Bill Self is so good. You watch those guys late game, they execute. That's why they win so many close games every year. That's why they win Big 12 every year, just because late game, man, those guys. They get shots up, they guard you, they rebound, and they execute their sets at a level that probably no one else in the country does. And that's why it's so hard to just pick Kansas to lose, no matter where they're playing, who they're playing. Just they execute at such a high level.
They're just been frustrating for me to watch offensively. But you are right, down the stretch, I felt like I watched so many games where it's 8:50 p.m. and it's 56-55 against Texas Tech or against Texas. And they somehow win the majority of those games. But let's go down. You mentioned a week 4 seed, and that is Providence. And I've got Providence losing in the first round to South Dakota State. South Dakota State is number one in 3-point percentage, 45% from three. I mean, they hit it at 45% clip. I think Providence, their offense, they also lost to UVA somehow. And they won a bunch of close games, which helped with their seeding. I think that was a lot of luck. I know people are pushing back on that luck, but a lot of the time, they didn't have a certain guy that a Gillespie or a certain guy that you're oh, this is why they're winning close games. It's just kind of they're winning them. So where are you at with Providence? Are they on upset alert in the 4-13 match?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even if they get through that, there's no way in hell they'd be in Iowa.
Yeah.
And they're also – the way they're playing right now, too, is not how they've been playing the whole year, which is not – I mean, they're lost by 30 in the Big East. And they won the Big East regular season. And then they're lost by 30 in the semis. I mean, and they have, and all their wins are by 2 points. If you go through their schedule, man, they play in every game they play is 3-point game, 2-point game. So I think the luck might run out. But hell of a season, though. I mean, you win
great,
the game.
Ed Cooley's all his interviews. He's a good dude. Iowa State is the 11th seed. They're an interesting team. They won 2 games last year. They won 2-22 last year. They fired their coach. Now they come this year. New coach, get some transfers. They beat Texas Tech. They beat Texas. They beat Iowa. They're 10th in defense. And so they are sitting at 11th seed. They play LSU. So I don't know much about LSU. LSU, they fired their coach, right? Will Wade?
Yeah.
And they're in the tournament? What's up with that? Are you worried for LSU?
Yeah. LSU is very athletic. They got that big kid from Stewart School, Efton Reed, 7-1 guy inside. Torrey Easton, first team All SEC on the wing. They just don't score it though. Again, those are teams that are sketchy. Iowa State doesn't score it at the greatest level either. But LSU, man, they really really struggle in a half court game. But both these teams did really really well out of conference. Both really struggled in conference play, which is something to look at because you're really not going to play a conference opponent. In the NCAA tournament. And that's what's about Purdue. All Purdue's losses are in conference. And they're essentially not going to play a Big Ten team. So it's just something, you know, you keep your eye on as you're watching these games. You know, is conference play overrated? Is it underrated? You know, that's always something I look forward to when I'm watching these NCAA tournament games.
And then we got Wisconsin, the 3 seed. So they play the winner of that game, LSU, Iowa State. They play Colgate, who we talked about San Diego State. So we got back-to-back teams who are great at three-point. Colgate is second in the country, 40% from three, and they play Wisconsin. They're not going to be out-athleticed, run out of the gym by Wisconsin. Wisconsin does have Johnny Davis, who's had an amazing year this year. Where are you at with Wisconsin? Are you worried by the way that, you know, the season ended? They did co-Big Ten champs, but then they lose in the tournament. Does Colgate have a chance to pull this upset?
No, I'm actually really, really high on Wisconsin. I've watched them a ton this year. I mean, if you're a fan of basketball, I mean, I think they're appointment TV. The way they play together, the way they screen for each other, the way they guard, they have size. They're starting five. All five guys can shoot it. Their foreman, Wall, I mean, you've got to watch his footwork inside. I mean, this dude has no chance to play in the NBA. He's 6'9", but, I mean, back to the basket, he has Drew Timmy footwork, if not better. I mean, Johnny Davis, three levels.
Yeah.
Scored on the block, can score from three, can score from mid-range, can score from ball screen. And then, obviously, we know Brad Davidson. And then the freshman point guard is really good, man, and they have two bigger wings they bring off the bench. I actually like them to go to the Final Four. I'm very, very big on Wisconsin. I feel like Wisconsin, too, always in the NCAA tournament advances.
Yeah.
They always win. They always advance, no matter who they have, no matter what region they're in, no matter what seed they are. Those guys always advance. That is a team I would not – would. I think Auburn should be very upset that's their 3 seed on their side, because Auburn's really good, too.
Yeah.
I think Wisconsin's going to beat them.
Yeah, that Wisconsin. I agree. I like Wisconsin. They're almost a lock for a Sweet 16 appearance. So we already talked about the bottom part with Miami and Auburn. So let's go ahead and toss out our Final Fours, and then I'll let you go. So I'm, you know, kind of – you talked me out of a bunch. You had really good reasoning on a lot of these. And so I'm going to change my top left pick. So you talked me into Gonzaga. I was a little worried about their guards. I had UConn beating them in the Sweet 16. But now I'm stuck Gonzaga, Texas Tech. I really like Texas Tech. But let me start with the ones that I know for sure I'm going to go with. I'm staying with Villanova. It's just a gut feeling. I love Jay Wright. I love the guards. I've watched them play. They're just such a smart team. And so I'm going to bet on that team that I know is going to be prepared and not nervous and not taking bad, you know, early shot clock shots. And Gillespie's been amazing. So that's top right. Bottom left, I'm going to stick with Miami. You know, this is kind of like a gut feeling. I've seen them play, the shot making. I think they beat Auburn, and then the Wisconsin matchup, I think it's going to be really interesting. And I just think Miami's got more shot makers than Wisconsin, and that's what it's going to come down to. And then I've got Kansas, not high on Kansas. I think they might lose before in the Elite Eight before that. So I've got Nova, I've got Miami, bottom left. This is tough. This comes down to Purdue versus Kentucky, and I'm going to change from Purdue to Kentucky. You talked me out of Purdue. I don't like teams that are in mid-March and we're like confused on how they get in their offense and how they should score, getting it down low, not getting their best shots. I don't think that's going to correct itself. And that's just, you know, the recipe I already said. If you're bad at defense, that's a recipe for an early exit. So I got them out in the Sweet 16. And then I'm going to go, man, I'm so stuck on this. Actually, do you want to do yours? Because I'm so stuck on the top left portion. So I got Nova, Miami, and Kentucky. You go ahead and toss yours out, and then hopefully I'm ready for my fourth team.
Yes, I'm not going as crazy as you are with Miami, unfortunately for the listeners. But I got Texas as a 3 coming out of the West. Kentucky as a 2 coming out of the East. I like Kentucky to mention in the national championship. And I got 1-1 seed. I got Arizona out of the South. I think they're really set up. And then I like Wisconsin, man. I really do. Wow. I think Wisconsin-Kansas Elite Eight is going to be an awesome matchup.
Yeah, they're a fun team. I'm excited for this. I just, you know, Arizona, I just have a blind spot when it comes to Pac-12. That's what I don't like about this is I feel like I have to guess with this Gonzaga team and with this Arizona team. I'm just going on previous years where you see Arizona, you know, getting out early. They do have a new coach this year. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and go with Gonzaga. So I'll go Gonzaga, Nova, Kentucky, Miami. You've got Texas Tech, Kentucky, Arizona, and Wisconsin. I've got Nova winning it. You've got Kentucky winning it. We've got it down, inked and paper. So we'll see how we do. Reed Jacoby, thanks for stopping by. I'm pumped up, man, for this March Madness. I think it's going to be awesome.
I appreciate you having me on, brother.
No problem. Later, man. All right, that wraps up today's podcast episode. Thanks to Reed for coming on. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'll be back at least two times a week with March Madness going on, updating you guys if there's any big NFL news as well. Thanks for listening. Talk soon. See ya.